Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Matt Shawley, here to spread some festive cheer after what has been. Excellent. It's a good start. Ho, ho, ho. Thank you for unwrapping this special Christmas Day edition of the Red Box Politics podcast in the Times. I'm actually here to spread some festive cheer after what has been a reasonably eventful end to quite a 12 months in politics. Forgoing Christmas Day with their loved ones and joining me to cast a wistful eye over the most dramatic year since last year are my two favourite impressionists who risk being put out of work by the clowns running the country, the brilliant Rory Bremner and the brillianter Jan Ravens. Welcome to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me here on Christmas Day in this lovely studio with the machine.
I think that's coffee. Fake news. I think we need to tell people we're not actually here on Christmas Day. Even Matt of the Red Box and Matt of the Times, he's telling fake news. I mean, do you know, we could record this program half an hour before it went out and it would still be out of date.
So what we've chosen to do is record it on the day that Theresa May is facing a vote of no confidence.
What?
In a few hours' time, and we don't totally know what had happened, but we'll edit it in later.
She appeared bleating on the Downing Street steps this morning. She had a bit of a struggle actually getting out of the door of Downing Street, but she made it to the podium in the end.
Before we dive into the year, you two have been on tour this year.
Yes.
But presumably the trouble with doing anything approaching topical comedy is you have to tear it up every morning.
Some of it you do. Obviously, we don't make ourselves such hostages to fortune that the entire show is based on what's happening in the day's news. But yes, there's definitely a kind of, oh, somebody resigns. And to be honest, for the last 2 years, there has been what television producers call jeopardy. You know, I haven't known really from one day to the next if Theresa's going to survive. And
you're the MP
and still,
for Jeopardy.
Yes.
Jeopardy South.
Yes.
Things do go out of date. We did a joke the other day, didn't we, about what's the difference between... What's the
reason? Oh, yes. Theresa doing her little joke. What's the difference between the alphabet and the 1922 committee? And the answer is that at least the alphabet has 26 letters. Now, the 1922 committee have 48. So that joke is out of date.
Well, let's wind that back because actually, end of... December 2017, it saw Theresa May rushing off to Brussels. She wasn't going to get a deal. She scrabbled it together. There wasn't going to be an agreement. There was. She ended the year. Everybody hated her. She was going to be forced out. Then she came back in January.
That sounds very familiar.
I'm sure
that was the end of 2017.
And then she began the year with a reshuffle. It was going to be the big relaunch. She's going to put her back on track, where she appointed Chris Grayling chairman of the Tory party for 27 seconds.
Mr. Personality.
And then tried to shake everything up, and then nothing changed. She tried to move Jeremy Hunt. She lost Justine Greening. And that sort of set the tone for the rest of the year, that every time she tried to do something that was within her grasp, it sort of didn't work and people fell out.
Thing, did it? It was like Chuck Checkers. A shunt the hunt would be a sort of quite... by the way, by the time this goes out, he's my bet for the next Prime Minister, by the way, because I think, you know, they'll want to
Jeremy
stop.
Jeremy Hunt?
Yeah,
because they'll... Why? Because he's such a sort of Teflon man. I mean, anybody that can preside over the kind of demise of the National Health Service and then be given the Foreign Office.
That's the alternative. I think they'll want to stop Boris candidate, won't they? I think Boris is a busted flush, by the way. Matt, you are looking so scared, I can tell you.
We just had a haircut.
Surely you'd rather it was Boris, because you could do an impression. Has anybody managed to do an impression of Jeremy Hunt?
Well, Jeremy Hunt hasn't. So, you know, I'm waiting for him. But no, he is. Well, the thing about Jeremy Hunt is, apart from the rhyming slang bit, is when he couldn't remember whether his wife came from China or Japan. Yeah. So that gives you an in to the sort of Tory thing of having a sort of slightly wacky foreign secretary, because we had William Hague when David Cameron was prime minister. We had a prime minister who thought that Somalia was a wine waiter. And then and then Boris, and then
you missed out Philip Hammers.
Good God.
Philip Hammers. I did, was didn't I?
He was foreign secretary. But then if foreign secretary becoming a chancellor, John Major did that for a while, didn't he? Yes. Because this all started, wasn't it? Your whole Eurosceptic thing.
It all goes back to 1990, when you called the Eurosceptics bastards.
Yes, I did. I did. I always rather regret that. What I meant to say was they were complete. Although I think I put forward Jacob Rees-Mogg, one of the candidates for Man of the Year. If you notice the thing about Brexiteers, by the way, they've all got three names. So there's Ian Duncan Smith, Jacob Rees-Mogg, Boris effing Johnson. But I think actually that Jacob Rees-Mogg is really Sacha Baron Cohen's finest creation, because I think it is a hysterical character, complete with all the darkness as well. It was in the Amazon Delta that I first tasted human flesh. And one thing we did consistently throughout the tour was I was thinking of him as a Gilbert and Sullivan character. And here's a list of all those countries in Europe I can't stand. There's Portugal and Italy and Poland and Romania, the Netherlands and Germany and France and Lithuania, Sweden, Spain and Hungary, and Finland and Estonia, Slovenia, Slovakia, maybe Macedonia. There's Malta, Belgium, Greece, Czech Republic and Croatia, and Luxembourg and Cyprus, which is practically in Asia, and Austria and Latvia and Denmark and Bulgaria, and Ireland, and if Turkey joins, the whole thing gets much scarier. But once we're out of Europe and no longer be inferior, we'll soon be doing trade deals with Burundi and Liberia. They want to stop us leaving, which is perfectly absurd of them. It's what the British public voted for, at least a third of them. And that's sustained through the year, pretty much.
I think back in March, I wrote a column about Jacob Rees-Mogg, and basically said he was just a flash in the pan, sort of 15 minutes of fame. He was going to burn out and disappear, and before we knew it, this is the line I managed to get in the Times on a Saturday. I said, it's only a matter of time before you've been on the National Lottery live, emptying his balls into Guinevere. It was a good joke, even if the prediction had turned out to not be entirely accurate. Let's wind back a bit earlier in the year. Salisbury was a big bit. March, the Russians, but it's sort of forget we were under attack from Russia in the middle of all of the Brexit stuff.
We don't know that.
Was that Jeremy Corbyn or was that Donald Trump?
Because Vladimir, he's denied it. He has denied it very strongly. This is the strange thing, that whatever evidence is given to Donald Trump, he says, well, I don't think that's the case because I spoke to him. Even later in the year when we had the Mohammed bin Salman thing in the Saudis and the CIA was saying, look, we are absolutely certain Mohammed bin Salman is behind this. He said, well, you know, I disagree. He denies it. And, you know, I hate the crime. I hate the cover up. But you know what? The Crown Prince hates it even more than I do. Yes, on Skripal. In fact, Jan and I are playing Salisbury at the end of January.
First plug, very good.
Exactly. I'm going to donate my fee to the people in Salisbury whose lives were really blighted. I mean, the people in the city centre who had in shops and industries and cafes there, because they've lived with this for 6 months. But I mean, it's been a chilling thing, really, isn't it? And, I mean, we're now discovering that, you know, there have been others. Well, we know there have been others, people who have disappeared or been poisoned, and journalists as well. I mean, 65 journalists have been murdered in the last year. 65. This is an extraordinary thing. This is going on. I've not known a time like this in my lifetime.
It does feel, and it every so often you sort of raise your eyes above the horizon a bit to see what else is going on other than bloody Brexit. And
you wonder when if Putin goes to the White House, you want to sing a song. If it's your thing to authorize the poisoning of former spies to get your kicks, that's Putin on the Brits, folks. Irving Berlin, I knew him very well.
Very talented man.
Talented, very talented. Yes, that's when he met Kim Jong-un earlier in the year, didn't he? This was the year when Trump...
I forgot about that.
Trump
that
decided,
wasn't even in my random... Yeah. How did I forget?
How easy you forget. But this is the year where Trump saw all the world's pariahs in one year. Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un, Piers Morgan. He went through the whole lot. But Kim Jong-un, they said, what did you make of Kim Jong-un? And he said, he's a very talented gentleman. He said,
What's
he good at? Killing. He's very, very good at
it. Yeah, very talented.
Kim Jong-un, a very talented gentleman. You can't make it up. You couldn't make it up. But of course, Trump does.
Do you find that? Do you like come up with something? You think, actually, that's not quite as mad as the thing that would actually happen?
Definitely. Roy describes it as, you know, we're not in WTO rules now, we're in WTF rules. You know, what is happening? Yeah. You know, we just can't believe it.
And every day you wake up and you think, what the have they done? I mean, but even behind the scenes, Andrew Wheeler, he was the chief lobbyist for America's biggest mining corporation. You know what he's doing now? He's head of the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, you can't make this stuff. It's all going on. And if any other American president had paid a porn star or got their lawyer to pay a porn star $130,000 the month before the election, that would be the end of the campaign. For Trump, that's just Tuesday.
And it just seems to sort of bolster his support.
Because there's all these women going, oh, well, he's, you know, we're all fallible. We're all, you see all these kind of, you know, these Trump supporters in the deep South. All going, oh, you know, everybody's fallible. Everybody's got faults. You know, you need to be forgiving. It's sort of like, what are you talking about?
So you're trying to do stuff in a world where truth doesn't really matter anymore. I mean, the Trump thing, the Washington Post have been tracking him since he became president. And since he became president, if you're talking about misleading claims or false statements or complete untruths, the total is now 6,500. So he's come out with 6,500 statements.
And haven't they created a new sort of
Pinocchio
category of lie?
Yes. Four Pinocchios.
Yeah, four Pinocchios. Like
but these are little things like, you know, when he says, you know, it's been the most successful 13 weeks in the history of the presidency when he'd been president for 11 weeks. It's the biggest tax cut in history, and there have been seven other tax cuts. There's a read across to Boris. You know, whatever Boris, because a lot of Brexit you can trace back to Boris's articles in the Telegraph in Brussels when he talked about, you know, Brussels banning prawn cocktail flavour crisps or banning our double-decker buses, which was just nonsense, but it doesn't seem to matter. And the other day we did Good Morning Britain, and there was Kevin Maguire from the Mirror and Andrew Pearce from the Mail. And Kevin Maguire said, why would you want Boris Johnson, a serial liar? Serial liar. He's a liar. He's a serial liar. Why would you want him? And Andrew Pearce said, well, he's popular. And that's it, isn't it? That's so in a way, you asked about how we tour, how we do satire this year. But in a strange kind of way, normally it's our job to kind of ridicule politicians and send them up. But when they are so ridiculous in and of themselves, you almost find yourself wanting to paint in the background and you know, actually provide facts and bring facts, but fight fire with facts, I call it.
So you end up doing the facts while the politicians are doing the sort of comic lies.
It sort of reminds me something that I sort of feel I have to say is that, you know, 2018 is the year where, you know, we're celebrating 100 years of female suffrage, and still misogyny is so prevalent. I mean, particularly in politics and comment. I mean, talking about Trump getting away with all this stuff. Can you imagine Hillary, you know, if she were president, getting away with all this stuff and then him having all those connections and yet still somehow kind of carrying on? I mean, you know, I used to do this joke, you know, of Hillary sort of saying, you know, I don't think the American people could forgive me for being female. You know, I certainly don't think they would have been as forgiving if I had been president and a young intern had performed a sex act on me. And, well, to be honest with you, I was looking forward to finding out. And I think with Theresa May, although there is no doubt that a lot of her judgments have been absolutely extraordinarily bad, nevertheless, people saying, you know, she's the worst prime minister we've ever had. I kind of think, mate, she's clearing up the mess left by one entitled Etonian wanker. And if you're not careful, there'll be another one along in a minute to take her place. You know, so, you know, be careful what you wish for.
And the thing that really struck me looking back over the years, in the midst of all of this, and everyone can say and do what they like and just carry on, back in April, Amber Rudd asked her officials a question about, are there targets for forced removals? They said no. She was asked the question, said no, there aren't. And a week later has to resign. And that's like normal politics.
People sort of say, well, she's a possible candidate as a prime minister. But, you know, Amber Rudd's majority is actually so fragile. I mean, she's got a majority of about 346 or something. Yeah. You know, she's MP for Hastings and Rye, which is basically a tale of two seasides. You know, you've got Rye, which is basically one large antique shop, Hastings, which is sort of the South Coast's answer to a Ken Loach film, you know, full of heroin addicts and Asbo seagulls.
Jan Ravens, Carol.
And so Amber Rudd is basically saved by these wealthy pensioners of Rye, you know, so she's only a flu epidemic away from losing her seat. She's probably sort of crop spraying Rye, you know, with flu vaccine as we speak.
She's emerged from the year with some credit, I think.
And then she gets to the end of the year and is back in the cabinet and slight
it's like it never happened.
Yeah.
When you're looking at the quality of the ministers that we've got on that front bench. I know that the ERG, they say all we want for Christmas is a new front bench. If you look at people of the quality of Chris Grayling and others, I think Amber Rudd back in the cabinet is a good thing.
And I think with Amber Rudd, you might not agree with the way she's voted on certain things, but you sense that she is a person with a good heart and with some integrity. Whereas with a lot of those people, you do doubt that. You doubt whether their motivations are for the good of all of us or just for the good of themselves.
I remember after her conference speech, Amber Rudd's conference speech, when she spoke strongly about immigration, she was talking about getting down to the tens of thousands. And I bumped into her and I asked her, why don't you take students out of the immigration figures? Because, you know, they're here for a short period of time. They actually contribute 20 times more than they cost the country. And they either leave or they stay. And as graduates, they have well-paid jobs and pay taxes. Why don't you take them out of the immigration figures, which even Farage agrees with, by the way. And she said, well, we don't want another U-turn at this stage. So clearly that was Theresa doesn't want another U-turn at this stage. And I think I got the sense that if she had the choice, it's something she wouldn't have done. She would have wanted to do. Interestingly, Sajid Javid hasn't done it either. Yeah. Hasn't taken. And it's, so to me, it seems an absolute no-brainer that when the immigration statistics are being thrown around, wasn't it an irony that at the end of the year, it was shown that the EU nationals had gone down by something like 150,000. And non-EU nationals coming into the country was running at a record level.
In May, John Bercow was said to have called...
Good day!
John Bercow was said to have called Andrea Leadsom a stupid woman. And I think in the end they denied that he'd sworn, but not the...
Not the fact that he called her a stupid woman.
And it was one of those arguments where nobody was quite sure whose side they were on.
Andrea Leadsom is one of those people who, you know... if the Tupperware party had a sort of, you know, terrorist wing, you know, she's like sort of an extremist Tupperware party.
What did she say about?
She's when she was up against Theresa as leader last time, she said, "I'm not saying I would make a better prime minister than Theresa because I'm a mother, but I am saying she's barren and her womb is cursed." I mean, she's. She does sort of put herself out as Mrs. Sensible, doesn't she? It's kind of very much the voice of reason.
And what about John Bercow? There's been a particular lot of complaints about him. I mean, he's not arguably being a fair referee in the Commons. He's quite clearly helping out the opposition. He's made Theresa...
Sorry, the opposition?
Well,
sorry, what? sorry, did somebody say opposition?
I don't know how many minutes we are without even mentioning Jeremy Corbyn. We're going to come on through it in a sec. But John Bercow has been sort of, you know, he's been calling all the people who hate Theresa first, so it all looks worse and all that. How do you think, what sort of years he had?
He's an extraordinary character, isn't he? I mean, you have speakers.
Disturbing, all the accusations against him. I mean, you know, all the bullying and...
The bullying accusations, and Margaret Beckett saying, well, it might be true, but he's on our side for Brexit, so let's not deal with it now.
That's not good enough.
Yeah.
What is the process for getting rid of the speaker? How does that work?
Probably not a proper system because they normally die in office or retire and go off to the House of Lords. Michael Martin was forced out after the MP's expenses scandal, but that was basically when it was obvious he'd lost the support of the House. And Bercow's calculation is the more anti-Brexit and anti-Theresa May he's being, the more he's got the support of the Labour Party. And it's that weird thing that MPs won't speak out against the Speaker because they think that if they do that and he stays, they won't get called again. It's completely correct.
How does he decide who to call?
It's entirely up to him. June. Let's talk about Jeremy Corbyn. My favourite bit for Jeremy Corbyn's year was Jazz Fest, Labour Live, the music festival where tickets sold like cold cakes and they had to sort of flog them off cheaply. Do you do Jeremy Corbyn?
Yeah, I don't do it very well, let me tell you. Because there's that kind of, he gets very exasperated with interviews and he starts to breathe through his nose and gets quite patronising, if you don't mind. I always think of him not so much as a leader, as a mascot. You know those grey things you get on the front of a lorry that look like they're sort of like a bit of a bear or something and they've got an eye missing. And people do say that he's a good speaker, but I've watched the speaker and I'm waiting for that moment and for the Obama moment, you know, when you're here and you're swayed by the rhetoric. And what I hear is, do you remember Michael Palin in Life of Brian? Where he's, and there will be rumours of things going astray. A friend shall lose his friend's hammer. And that's, I mean, but behind this is a real seriousness. I mean, it's like he's sort of bed blocking. He's there, but for no real purpose. I mean, you think at this time of complete swirling chaos and disarray, I think it might even be you, actually, that tweeted today that, you know, with the Prime Minister's questions on a Wednesday at this huge moment, that he's most likely to lead with bin collection. There is such talent there in the Labour Party, but it's kind of, you think, well, what is he there for? And he didn't want to be there either.
But a lot of the talent is not sort of on his side, is it? It's your Yvette Cooper.
Keir Starmer has had a good year. I think Keir Starmer has had a very good year.
Yvette Cooper has too. I mean, Yvette Cooper in those Home Affairs committees, she's on fire, isn't she? She's so great.
Caroline Dynage, the immigration minister, going up against Yvette Cooper is a joy to watch every time. To the point she just stopped answering questions and just stared at her because she thought, if I don't say anything, I can't get it wrong.
You talked earlier about misogyny. I think actually in some ways in the House of Commons, it's been the women that have led the way. Theresa May, like her or not, you know, the resilience and the stickability. And I mean, I'm not a huge Theresa May fan, nor is Jan, I think.
I may have occasionally said one or two things about it, which were a bit anti. Well,
But given that, I mean, I think even the sort of hardest-hearted are aware that she has held to the sense of duty. And if you think about, we talked about Amber Rudd earlier on, but Anna Soubry, who's been kept plugging away from the backbenches about Brexit and has taken all sorts of abuse. We talked about Jess Phillips just now. And even Nicky Morgan as chair of the Treasury Select Committee. Actually, a lot of the most impressive MPs in the last year have been women, I would say.
But then, of course, Rory, you get the less impressive ones, Rory, that always are so disappointingly badly prepared for their interviews. Diane Abbott, she's actually kept quiet. The year before...
Has she still got that migraine from the election?
In 2017, I was genuinely worried that she was really very, very unwell. I don't know what that was about, but certainly this year it seems to be that she hasn't been the one that's put out by the Labour Party to answer lots of very detailed questions on the cost of this, that and the other.
I think on that one she was just very, very unprepared. I think
it will cost.
Yeah. But then it's
different. It will cost.
But the really frustrating thing was, from a journalist's point of view, senior politician during a general election campaign is asked a question that they should know the answer to.
Yeah.
And if they don't know, it just became a sort of MSM conspiracy to stitch everyone up. Yes. This was a totally outrageous expectation they would know what they were doing.
Yeah, that's the thing that Trump's done, making the mainstream media the villain in all this. Obviously, sometimes it can behave less than, but it's the media that's trying to sort of draw out the truth.
Now, one politician did pop up just before Christmas getting into a car. Was David Cameron. Although I think Danny Dyer, I thought, had the best summation.
Yes, the four-letter summation of,
Do you do a Danny, were you going to do
no,
Danny
I
Dyer?
No, I do a David Cameron. I know Danny Dyer. Well, I mean, there were two Danny Dyers, weren't there? It was Danny Dyer pair and Danny Dyer field.
Oh, yeah, Danny Dyer, right. It was so funny because Corbyn was on that same programme. Sitting next to Pamela Anderson, bizarrely. And the way Danny Dyer just went, David Cameron, twat.
No one's got a clue what Brexit is. He said it's a riddle. He just kept saying it's a riddle. And then he said, where is that twat, Cameron? Is he in Nice with his trotters up?
Yeah. Well, I think he kind of spoke for the nation there, didn't he?
Yeah.
At that particular point. I think I was in Nice. I'm a big fan of Europe, as you know. My father, he used to take us all around Europe when I was a child. All these wonderful places. We went to Monaco and Switzerland and the Isle of Man and Luxembourg. And I remember, and he said, one day all this will be yours. But yes, he has. It's Christmas, and he did a carol service, didn't he, with Alistair Campbell? And I think Piers Morgan, who was a last-minute replacement for Nick Clegg, supposedly.
I did a carol service last Christmas. This is completely irrelevant, but anyway, I'll tell you. I did a carol service last Christmas at Chelsea Royal Hospital, and there are all sorts of the great and the good there. And one of the other readers was Dame Joan Collins.
And she arrived, with Percy, in a sort of round fur hat and large sunglasses, with huge, shopping bags from Louis Vuitton. She sort of trotted in on these high black patent boots. And she hadn't arrived for the sound check, so nobody knew what she was going to read. And she put all these sort of masses of shopping bags down and sat down next to Percy. And, time came for her reading and she trotted up the steps to the lectern and go, imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. What?
Oh, that was like Eva Peron, wasn't it? Do you remember Quentin Crisp? Wonderful, the raconteur. He told a story about Eva Peron, who addressed the crowd in Buenos Aires, and she threw her arms wide open. And as she did this gesture, there was a noise. It was a noise like...
trucks being shunted into a railway siding as all these rings and bangles and bracelets clattered up around these expensive jewellery. We, the shirtless. imagine no possessions,
yeah.
Joan.
Yeah.
Now, who knew that we'd end the year having seen Theresa May dance not once, but twice?
Well, you know, she does have to think about her future. So I think, you know, using her own party conference as an open audition for Strictly Come Dancing was probably a very wise move. Although, if you see Theresa auditioning for Strictly, you know perfectly well that she'll be the crap old one that's partnered with Anton Dubek and voted off in the first week.
Oh, Theresa, but you were like the African queen. You see, she danced in Kenya. And it was so precise and it was so... But I've got to say, darling, we have to restrict your freedom of movement.
Yes, yes. I think it's very important.
That was Jan's line.
Party conference season. It was a sort of nightmare for people like me because I go to all of them. I even went to the Lib Dems, mainly because it was by the sea and the sun was out and there's a new crazy golf course in Brighton. And we went thinking that nothing was going to happen. And basically nothing happened. But Vince Cable announced he was going to resign in this sort of tantric resignation where sort of nothing ever happened. And then it finished up with his speech, his exotic spresm.
It's terrible because it had been... That was the one line in his speech that had been trailed. And it's funny. It's funny how the human brain works like that, because he was going to say that Brexit was an erotic spasm. I always think he's a bit like Barraclough in Porridge. No, don't do that. No, you've probably done it. But it's a little bit like you do that with the weather forecast, don't you? You sit down and think, right, okay, weather forecast, right, I'm going to really pay attention. And at the end, you go, oh, God,
I've drifted off. I know, it's like people explaining the backstop agreement. So like, oh, sorry, I just drifted off.
We work with Fred McCauley quite a lot, and Fred, he said he accidentally, I think he was in Northern Ireland, he accidentally referred to the backstop as the butt plug. So they're renegotiating the butt plug.
Although I'm not sure if the Brexiteers would be more pro or anti if that was what it was called. The other thing about party conference season, we thought it was all about Boris Johnson because he comes rolling in for one day and then makes a great big hullabaloo. But he was completely upstaged by an even more toffee, posh...
Jeffrey
Cox, the Brexiteer.
Oh, and now!
Yeah.
It's no use baying from the back benches. Yeah. And he was in tears after.
Get real and grow up. Now, that was in the Commons the other week, wasn't it? But yeah, the party conference. I mean, I'd never heard him speak before. I was absolutely, I thought, who the hell is this?
So I knew of Jeffrey Cox because years ago when I worked on the Western Morning News, he was one of my local MPs. So before the 2010 election,
right,
I could phone him up and you knew he would give you a terrific quote about why the Labour government was the worst thing ever. And in those days, when you phoned his mobile, he'd recorded his answer phone message. I think he had an office near Big Ben Tower. And he'd recorded it with the bells going off. So it's, if you didn't pick up the phone, it would go, bong! Hello, Jeffrey here! Bong! Please leave a message. Unfortunately, he doesn't have that anymore. I think he's a more serious Attorney General for our times.
We talked about Phil Hammond earlier on and Chris Grayling. There are very few beyond the big beasts that are sort of really worthwhile for an impressionist. You think, oh, I can really work with this. But Jeffrey Cox, I think, I can mark him down as a New Year project. There's a New Year's resolution.
What about you, Jan? Who do you think is emerging? This is assuming that Liz Truss is currently Prime Minister.
Some, you lose some.
Well, Liz Truss is bizarre. Because
that is true.
Liz Truss does that thing of sort of, you know, you get the impression that she was one of those little girls whose daddy always told her she was very funny. And so she makes these jokes and very slowly and badly timed. And everyone seems to feel obliged to kind of go and do that sort of what you call my whinny, you know, when you tell me a new joke and I go and, you know, it's sort of like, it's kind of...
I wish you could see Jan's face doing that impression, because it's just, it's not the same. It reminds me a little bit of your Kirsty Allsop, which is the...
Kirsty Allsop, yes. Location, yes. The ghastly girl at school you secretly wish you'd slapped when you had the chance.
But that's a brilliant Liz Truss.
My abiding memory of Liz Truss is that thing that's on YouTube from years ago of her at a party conference saying, we have exported 58
tons of pork sausage or something. I mean,
it was a disgrace. It was cheese. We import too much of our cheese. And she said, that is a disgrace.
And waited for three hours for applause.
Everyone fell about laughing. And we laugh about it ever since. Now, she's confused that with thinking that she's now a sort of stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
They're laughing at you.
It's really weird. But is she, I mean, Matt, I mean, you can tell, is she thought, you know, to be talented or?
Is she thought to be talented?
Well, obviously, if she is now Prime Minister, I think she's excellent. And the more interviews she wants to do with the Red Box podcast, the better.
It is scary thinking who could, but I don't, it's really weird to be doing this, thinking that it's all going to be out of date. Anyway, I hope you're enjoying your Christmas. Right now, the Nativity play is taking place.
Yes, exactly.
Where Theresa May and Philip Hammond are playing Mary and Joseph, looking after the little baby Brexit. And wasn't planned. And the three wise men have resigned. And the ox and ass are looking for a strong stable.
Arlene Foster's playing King Herod.
And Joseph keeps turning to Mary and saying, what on earth is going on? And Mary says,
let me be clear. Nothing has changed.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I sort of feel like there's not a lot of point during the rest of the year because we sort of know what happened, yet we don't know what happened. October and November sort of came. I mean, nothing happened. It's all exploded again.
We had a royal wedding.
We did have a royal wedding.
Which Trump didn't go to. Wasn't invited. I wasn't invited. But I know Meghan very well, Meghan Merkel and her mother Angela. That was a good wedding, wasn't it? That was a good
wedding. We liked the wedding. We liked the vicar.
He spoke about Martin Luther King, I knew him very well. I was very close to him. We were really close. Very talented man. We were so close. But I think it captured a real spirit, and having the gospel choir was an inspired move. And the preacher was amazing. He did, as Prince Philip would put, he did go on a bit.
Yeah.
And you could see that. So he slightly milked. I think for the first sort of 4 or 5 minutes, he thought, this is amazing. And he thought, ooh, hang on, there's a little bit more of this. The sadness is that by the end of the year now, the knives are out for Meghan, and you can really tell. And we did the Royal Variety Show a couple of weeks ago, and Jan was, you were really thrilled to meet me.
Well,
she
you
was
know
very
what?
Starstruck.
I mean, I'm not, you know, particularly royalist. And we were in the lineup afterwards, and I just found myself saying to Meghan, "Can I just say you're a breath of fresh air in our royal family? Thank you so much. Oh, thank you." And I said, "You were so brilliant the way you laughed at everything, and you sat there and laughed and clapped." I said, "It was so lovely." Well, Harry and I have been looking forward to it. It was a great date night. What a sweet thing to say.
That's so nice. When you say you're a breath of fresh air, it's like, what's Patricia Routledge? What was her?
Oh, yes, it's like, I couldn't be more thrilled about Brexit. It's like a shot of Febreze in a teenager's bedroom.
But also, I think people are just glad to have a break from Brexit. The idea of two people arguing over Tiara, we can understand that. That's easily solved.
Yeah. We're all having arguments at Christmas, God knows, yes.
I'm sorry to drag us back to the obvious, but I mean, at one point, the offices of the Prime Minister and the leader of the opposition opposition were debating whether to go on after the Strictly results show or before the final of I'm a Celebrity. And it came down to that. And I, by the way, it was the best show I saw this year was Matt's in Cheltenham. I can make him blush now. Because, you know, you had compiled this material during the year and your thing has always been...
This is not normal. This is not normal. And it hasn't been normal all year. And I suspect won't be normal.
But why is it so particularly not normal? Is it just that we know more now? I mean, is it that more things get exposed or...
So I did a show, an hour-long show at the Cheltenham.
Yeah, you do it. Come on.
And in one of the more serious bits in it, I thought about it being the end of shame. There's a sort of shamelessness in politics. That in the past, if a cabinet minister got something spectacularly wrong, they resigned.
Yeah.
Or if, for example, you accidentally mislaid your majority, you'd resign over it. Or if, in Jeremy Corbyn's case, when 70 or 100 front benchers resigned, he lost a vote of no confidence and just carried on. And Donald Trump's the same sort of thing. Once you give up caring whether or not you look ridiculous, unprincipled or whatever, then you just sort of carry on. And it's the way that everyone in politics... Just it doesn't matter if you get something wrong or you're caught lying or you're caught, you know, they just it's the sort of shamelessness
that he's just a liar, but he's popular.
Yeah. And it just keeps on going, which is why I think one of my people of the year was Lord Bates, who was the minister in the Lords who turned up. He turned up a few minutes late to answer questions in the Lords and resigned at the dispatch box. And I'm terribly sorry about all of this. And I'm going to submit my resignation. And Theresa May's response was, you're not getting out of it that easily. And she refused to accept it. And he's still stuck in the government. But at least one person was willing to resign on a point of principle. So before we wind up, you two have been on tour this year. How does that work? Is it you on your own? Do you do sketches together?
Actually, not that many, as it turned out.
Well, when we started, because Jan had done a show in Edinburgh last year and I had some material, obviously, from the year. So we said, well, let's do a show together. And then we had a director, Marcus, who used to direct my show at the BBC, Marcus Mortimer. And he said, look, if you're on stage, you've got to work, you know, do something together. So we wrote a sort of Fawlty Towers sketch, Matt, and it was like it was a sort of post Brexit Fawlty Towers, and
so what's Britain going to be like post Brexit? Well, basically, you know, as far as we can tell, it's going to be like a 1970s sitcom. Basil,
coming, dear.
Basil, I hope you're not still fawning over all those ghastly Americans in their silly red caps.
Those ghastly Americans are exactly the kind of people we want to come and attract to dine here after we've given Europe the old heave-ho.
Well, they'll have a job, Basil. The kitchen's closed.
Well, what do you mean the kitchen's closed?
You know perfectly well, since we left the European Union, we've got no staff.
Oh, I suppose that's my fault as well, is it? Right, well, stupid Basil.
Well, you started it.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. You voted Brexit.
Look, you know perfectly well the only reason I voted Brexit is I don't want a bunch of faceless bureaucrats in Brussels telling me what to do.
No, Basil, that's my job.
Right, my little fount of all wisdom, maybe you wouldn't mind telling us, what has the EU ever done for us?
Well, Basil, apart from the single market in the open borders, if you're talking about Torquay, there's the $2.5 million they spent developing the waterfront and the $1.5 million on the coastal zoo. That's true, actually.
Right, well, if you're going to bring facts into it, Manuel!
You'll have to shout louder than that, Basil. He's gone home.
What?
He's in Barcelona.
Right, okay, well, good riddance. We can replace him with some good old British staff.
That's a little bit tricky, Basil, as European nationals make up a quarter of our chefs, a third of our housekeepers, and three quarters of our waiters.
Well, we only need three quarters of a waiter.
Oh, good evening, Major.
Good evening, Mrs. Fawlty. Johnny Foreigner giving you jip again. I'm so sorry, Major. Sybil, what is the matter with you?
I'm so sorry. It's just the Major looks just like Nigel Farage.
Gotta look the part, Mrs. Fawlty. Blazer, club tie, pink trousers.
Stuck in the 1950s.
No. 1940s. Got the Hun on the run and shoulder to shoulder with the Yanks.
You can go shoulder to shoulder with some in the bar if you like.
Yes, charming people, all Trump supporters. Yes, just don't mention the trade war. I mentioned it once. I think I got away with it.
Take no notice of him, Major. Have you had a lovely day?
Lovely day, thank you, Mrs. Fawlty. I went for a good British walk along a British seaside and finished up with a lovely British curry. Oh, good evening, Mrs. Richards.
Good evening, Major.
Seen the Telegraph? Pound down again.
Jolly good. Nasty foreigners, that'll send them packing.
Yes, I expect that'll be why they closed down the care home.
Yes, did you hear about that? They had no staff, so they had to shut down.
What? Who's got to sit down?
No, the care home. All the foreign staff left. They had to go home.
I'm so sorry. I'd completely forgotten. Brexiteer.
Is she? Oh, good for you, Mrs. Richards.
No. She suffers from Brexit ear. Selective deafness.
I'm sorry, what?
only hearing what you want to hear.
No, missed it completely.
It's ironic, really, isn't it, Basil?
What is, darling? The fact that we've finally sold out Gourmet Night only to find the only thing we've got to give them is a tin of Spam?
No, that John Cleese is leaving Britain just as the entire country's turning into Fawlty Towers. You think he'd be flattered?
Well, if you enjoyed that sketch, then you can go and see Rory and Jan on tour. Where can people see and how can they get tickets?
I think we're in Radlett. That sold out 23rd of January, 24th of January in Tunbridge Wells, and 30th of January in Salisbury. And as I say, some of that money will be raised for people of Salisbury after the Skripal poisoning. And we're in Cambridge.
I think 3rd of February we're in Cambridge at the Arts Theatre.
Thank you for listening, not just this special, but throughout 2018. My thanks to Rory Boner and Jan Ravens, but also to everyone who's appeared as a panellist, often at short notice, and to everyone who's got in touch with comments and reviews, both good and bad, for the podcast. And a special thanks to my producer, Alex Jakes, who managed to make the podcast sound brilliant, apart from when we go on the road to party conferences and he doesn't come with us and I'm in charge of recording it. But for now, for me, Matt Chorley, it's Merry Christmas and goodbye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Cross Wires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.